Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy. So today, guys, I am going to be bringing you chapters 13, 14, and 15 of our saga of God Bless the Girls. I'm going to try to get through this as fast as possible because I am at work and people are interrupting this recording. So I'm going to try to do this uninterrupted, but bear with me today, guys. We're going to get through it, okay? So as you guys remember, Sarah Overcast doing her thing. She woke up inside of a basement chained to the floor, and her and three other girls are trying to figure out and bring together clues to figure out how they got to that place in the first place. A couple things that were being revealed in the last couple of chapters, you can go back and review that. But you already know if you got to this point what's been going on. So here we go, chapters 13, 14, and 15. And as I've already said multiple times on here, anything that's been written or recited on this is all by Michael Anthony McMillan. Here we go. What? Terry said. So you do know these people?
I fucking knew it, Boston said.
No, I don't know them.
Well, it's not like they're wearing fucking name tags, Sarah, Terry said. How do you know his name?
Yeah, spit it out, Boston said. I think I was introduced to him at this basement kickback earlier tonight, but I was drunk and the place was like barely lit.
You think or do you know? Terry said. I can hear all the girls' chains scraping the ground coming towards me for a better listen.
I think, but I know I remember seeing those shoes at the party. And those were the same shoes I saw when he, Gore, was carrying me in here.
I don't know, Boston said.
Shut up, Boston, Terry snapped. What else?
And the wrestling thing makes sense because of the tattoo he has on his ankle.
What tattoo?
When Gore squatted down to pick you up, Terry, I saw that he had a tattoo. My ex-boyfriend wrestled at the college level, and he had the same one, and it stands for USA Wrestling.
Okay.
That's how I know about the traveling schedule as well. My ex was always here one day, gone for three, back for two, then out for five, depending on how far the team had to travel.
Where did you say this party was at tonight?
At my buddy Josh's place.
And he introduced you to Gore?
Yeah, well, not really. Gore wasn't Josh's friend, per se. It was his older brother Sam's friend, who also wrestles at the college level. And at the same college as he does.
Wait, which college?
Boston interrupted.
No. Don't even tell me.
Texas, right? Texas University?
Yes!
I exclaimed, not fully knowing why I was so excited.
How did you know that, Boston? Susie asked.
Because during rush week, we make it a requirement for all of our pledges to have to know and be able to recite on command certain activities at the university that the university has going on at any given time.
Why is that?
It's just another way to overload the mind between course study and general hecticness of college life. That's how that shows us their dedication to the sorority. Besides, that's the only way you can haze pledges these days. I won't even tell you what I did to get into the sisterhood. Anyway, my job this year was to find frivolous information that the pledges would have to remember, and the men's wrestling team schedule was just that. And let me guess, the week you were taken, Texas University was on your campus.
Bingo was his name.
Boston, I said, do you remember anything about your abduction?
Well, the last thing I remember, I was arguing with a guy I'm seeing about him staying up until I was finished with the rush for the night and going over to his dorm.
Uh-huh. And where were you at the time of your abduction?
In the sorority house.
Well, in the shower room of the house.
A shower room? You guys had a shower room?
Like there's more than one shower in each room?
It's one room.
But yeah. It's a big open space with 10 shower heads in it. Do you know how crazy it would be for 25 or so college girls to be fighting after one shower every morning?
You're right. What happened next?
Well, as it was the last night of the rush, basically the whole house was downstairs preparing for the party we were going to have after accepting the new girls. I was upstairs on the phone arguing when I heard the door creak open. But it was a community space, and I knew everyone that was supposed to be in the house, so I didn't really pay it any mind. That was until I heard someone whistling. I think it was that song from Kill Bill. You know, the... Fucking creeps. I know that song. Continue. Well, the echo was so annoying that I told whoever it was to shut up or get out. But they didn't stop. Finally, I told Jamie to hold on and I went in search of, for the source of it. And when I came around the corner, there was a girl there. Or maybe it was more like a lady looking at herself in a mirror, applying foundation or something on her face. I couldn't see too much of her from the side view because she had a black hood on. But she did have a scar and a cut at the edge of her mouth that curved like it was like extending her smile. And even when she saw me to the side of her, she just kept whistling. That's when I asked her if she had a problem. What did she say? I asked. Nothing. She just smiled. Just smiled? Believe me, it creeped me the fuck out too. Then? That's when I saw her. Well, it wasn't her real face, but like painted over. She was made up to look like a skull. Her eyes and nose were painted black and the rest of her face white. Her lips were painted like teeth, so when she smiled, it looked like she had two sets. Did you say anything? Nope. Everything went black after that. Then I woke up here. Complete darkness. The last thing I saw was that fucking smile. It was a genuine smile, too. Like, what she was doing was an enjoyment for her. Like, she had been waiting for me all along, and when I came out to see her, she already knew I was her prey, and she was happy to see me. Chapter 14. Damn it, I thought to myself amongst the girls in the dark. I needed more clues to go off of. I needed to know if this was just random abductions, or if there was a reason why this rape crew did what they did. Yes, some people are just crazy, or at least that's the way it looks from the eyes of normal, everyday law-abiding citizens, but even the craziest people in society's past had a contributing factor or a starting point to what they eventually get themselves into. There's a reason why serial killers and rapists from different parts of the world, or even different centuries of the different centuries, most of the time have patterns. Whether the victims they choose or how they stalk them and abduct them, there's always six similarities in what they do to the victims and what they do after the action is done, rather it be keeping souvenirs or returning to the place of action was carried out. I just have to figure out our guy's motive, and if I do that, maybe I can head them off before it gets worse for us. What I learned in almost all the books I've read or documentaries I've seen is that of all the infamous serial rapists slash killers in the past is two things. One is that they're usually white males. And two is that everything that led them to those heinous acts was almost always rooted in childhood, whether it was loveless and abusive parents or maybe the same thing that was done to them, they eventually did to their victims. What happened to them first. The whole apple doesn't fall from the tree theory. Maybe that's all Gore was doing exactly what was done to him. Maybe by his own parents, maybe by a close family member or a babysitter. Maybe he was in a, if you can't beat him, join him situation. All his influences would be from the people he spent the most time with, right? Even for myself, ever since I was a child, I loved to run. For no reason. I would take off and run for hours. Something about it just made me feel great. I loved the sweat of it, and I also loved the pumping of my heart in unison with my breathing. It was just cool. I would look at endless grass fields and mountains in the distance while running, and it was the best thing I've ever experienced. I didn't even know why I did it. It was just my thing, and nobody could take that away from me. One day, after about 4 years of me running almost every day of the week, I was lacing up my shoes on the porch to go out and run. And my mom came outside with some watermelon slices. She just watched me as I conducted my usual stretches and just smiled. I asked her what her deal was, and she just casually said while wiping her mouth of watermelon juice, "Your daddy used to run like that in high school, in college, and Pop-Pop did before him, even his dad." Well, I'm recording. Well, nobody had mentioned that to me. I just did it because I loved it. Apple in the tree. So maybe if the other two people in this sick crew were Gord's, maybe if the other two people in this sick crew, were Gordon's family and they did this to him, maybe he was just doing the family business thing. Maybe he had built up some resentment towards them and he used that to take it out on, to take his anger out on the girls. It looked like he had already hated them for making him wrestle anyway. I heard Gore's thuds come towards the door, then past it. At that point, with using little to no eyesight, my other senses were like hypersensitive. I could tell the difference between each of their footsteps individually. I could even tell which room he was in when he ran water. It's amazing how alert and it's intuitive the mind is when it's not distracted. It's a primal thing that our ancestors possessed in spades, I guess. He was definitely in the kitchen at that moment. I heard cabinets opening and closing in the refrigerator too. The sound of running water hummed around us through the squeaky pipes, and not too long after, I heard the pans and the stove tick 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 to start a fire. Then I smelled pork. My stomach grumbled at me. I hadn't even realized how hungry I was until then. I was so busy talking crap to Mark back at the restaurant that I don't remember if I ate or even ordered anything before our fight. Next, the door creaked open and Gore's wide frame filled the doorway. The waft of eggs and fresh bread came running down to me. "Please," my stomach called out, "give me something." Gore walked down the stairs carefully, holding plates in each hand. When he reached the bottom, he went and placed a plate barely reachable next to Boston. By the shine of his light, I saw two beautiful pieces of perfectly cooked bacon, two over-easy eggs, and a toasted English muffin, and by the color of it, maybe strawberry jam smeared ever so gently across it. My mouth watered. He placed a replica of Boston's plate close to Terry. Both plates, obviously, with no fork or knife. Before Gore could hit the first stair, I heard the scraping of Boston and Terry pulling their plates closer. Then there was the inevitable sounds of smacking lips and chewing. By the time Gore came back with two more plates, I was almost certain Boston and Terry were finished with theirs. Susie was probably over there anticipating the arrival of her food, and although I was starving, I would do something that my stomach would never forgive me for. "I'm not going to eat this," I said, looking up at the light when a plate was placed near me. I can only imagine the girls in their respective corners looking at me while scarfing down their meals, like you do when you're eating popcorn during the greatest scene of your favorite movie. The light bared down closer to me, and Gore grunted, "Eat!" In the silence, the screeching of the plate against the floor was deafening, but I pushed it right back at him. "No!" The light grunted louder. "Eat!" And then the next time, and when he pushed the plate towards me, it hit my knee, breaking one of the yolks. "No!" I yelled this time, and I picked up the other egg and threw it at him, hitting him square in the light. Oh, he was pissed, all right. The headlight stayed in the same place for what felt like forever. He was staring at me for sure, probably trying to figure out what the hell he was going to do with the defiant one. I didn't know if the girls were ever not cooperative besides the times they did those things to them, but I wasn't going to see what happened if I pressed a few buttons. People make mistakes when they're flustered. I didn't know how smart it was to piss off your captor. But I couldn't just stay down there for the rest of my life. I have shit to do. Now, I probably should have left it at the food, you know, give him something to think about and assess him from there. Who knows? Maybe if he was a true softy, he would have just gone upstairs and cooked me another egg. But no, I had to open up my big ass mouth. He finally turned away from me, figuring I would cool down and eat the scraps off the floor when I was hungry enough. But no, I wasn't done with him just yet. When he was about halfway up the stairs, I did something that would eventually end up hurting us all. I know your fucking name, Gore. Chapter 15. Almost there, guys. All the girls gasped at once. The egg stained light slowly turned back to me, and as soon as it did, that ice cold chill shot up my back again. The next thing I knew, the light ran down the stairs and it charged right at me. I held my hands up, bracing for the beating of my life, and then ironically, felt nothing. My eyes were closed so tight and I flexed so hard that I hadn't even realized that Gore was snatching up all the plates in anger. I felt triumphant for about, I don't know, a half a second. That was until I realized that Gore decided to punish all of us for my inability to follow his rule. I followed the glow of the light and watched as Gore snatched the half-eaten plates from the girls. Boston's plate looked almost done, but Susie unfortunately hadn't had the chance to even touch hers yet. After he racked them all up, he galloped up the stairs and slammed the door behind him. We all listened in silence as the thugs walked into the kitchen. Gore threw the plates in the sink, breaking them for sure. Then it sounded like he was pacing back and forth between a bedroom to my left and above and past Susie, then back to my right in between Boston and myself. Sarah, Boston yelled. What the hell is wrong with you? We're all gonna die in here next, thanks to you, Terry said. I don't know, I said. Stupid, 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 I heard someone say after hitting their palms against their head. I had to, I guess. You had to? Susie said. You guess? Terry said. How about the next time you guess you have to say something smart, you make sure it doesn't affect other people's stomachs. She was right, but I couldn't help it. Don't you guys want to get out of here? I said. Susie, you've been here a month. Boston, Terry, a couple of weeks. Has anything changed? We all shut our mouths when we heard what sounded like talking. Was Gore on the phone? I knew I hadn't heard anyone come to the door. The sound was muffled, but he sounded like he was in a mixture of panic and pissed. Maybe he was talking to himself. Changed? Susie continued. Yeah, has anything changed? Gore feeds you guys some food, make sure you're clean. He sings you some old fucking songs, and then every couple of days, they come down here and they violate you? You guys are okay with that shit? You guys are cool with that being your end all? Fuck that. I'll die before I let them take my innocence. The room went quiet again. Even Gore had left out the front door of the house during my speech. Your innocence, Terry said. What are you talking about? Nothing. I said, not realizing how much that little tirade took out of me. I felt my butt hit the hard, cold cement without me remembering if I even gave myself the order to do so. Now I get it, Boston said. Wow, you're a sneaky one. Get what? Terry interjected. What's sneaky? Yeah, she comes down here and from second number one, she talks shit to them upstairs. None of us has tried that. She tried to piece together all of our stories with the timelines, the football games, and the wrestling tournaments. Don't you guys see what's happening? So? Terry said, she's trying to get the hell out of here. I want to too. We are all trying to get out of here, Terry. We've plotted and talked about our perfect time for attack. Sorry, guys. We've plotted and talked about our perfect time for attack before she got here, no? Yeah. So? Did you see Sarah's eyes when she lunged at the female one before? She looked like she was the fucking predator. I can kill every last one of them for what they done to me up there, Terry said. No. She's protecting something more. She's hiding much more. Okay. All right then, Boston, what is it already? what we hold most sacred in this life. As little girls, anyway. The thing that the world considers us makes us innocent until we give it away. Oh, Terry said, yeah. But in Sarah's case, she won't be given the chance to give it away to a boy of her choosing. She won't have a sweet little secret. She won't have a sweet secret story that she can keep to herself or tell only her closest girlfriend when she's older. When they take her upstairs and take her clothes off and ravage her body, it'll be the body of a virgin. The very thing she's been waiting to do for all this time, with just the right person, with Mr. Perfect himself, they're gonna snatch that shit away from her forever. Boom. All right, guys, we kind of got through it. That was a tough one, and I'm sorry that it didn't go super well, but chapters 13, 14, and 15. So now, as you can see, Sarah is a fighter. You know, she's a competitive girl. She's a runner and all that other stuff. But what we just realized just now is that Sarah's never been deflowered, as they say. She is a virgin. So the plot thickens and it gets even crazier with her. And the girls being, you know, of college age and older women, older than her at least, you know, they've been down this road before. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm pretty sure no matter what, you know, rape is horrible and stuff like that. But these girls have more life experience than Sarah. They've been in love before. They've made love to men before and stuff like that. But can you imagine? Can you fucking imagine? Excuse my language, but can you imagine not only being raped, but that being your first time? That's a traumatic fucking experience. I don't care if you're a female or a male. That's a traumatic experience. I don't know how that came to me, but you know, when you write and you just follow the muse just takes you to strange places like that. And yeah. So anyway, I hope you liked the chapters for this week. Like I said, I know the recording gets a little tough sometimes and I'm still not perfect at it, even when there isn't any, you know, background noise and people coming up interrupting. Well, I'm working for them, so they're not necessarily interrupting me. But anyway, I don't want to talk any much about anything else, just the story. So I thank you. I love you. I appreciate you for listening to another episode of Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. As you know, you can go get a hold of me on Instagram and at Michael DeGrio, or email mzzack199@gmail.com. And thank you all again for all the love and all the messages and stuff like that. We're getting more and more views as the chapters go on. There's more and more people watching or listening. And I just thank you guys for it, man. So we'll get back to it. This week, I'm dropping this on Saturday instead of Friday. Not to get too deep, but schedule has been changing a lot. I've had to, you know, replace employees and work for other employees while they're on vacation and stuff like that. You got to pay the cost to be the boss, as Mr. Snoop Dogg says. So I just thank you for following my journey, man. It's so cool to know that you guys care about this. But, you know, if it wasn't for the talent and everything like that, I wouldn't have any more listeners. So I appreciate you again. I promise to try to give you an even better episode next week. As I said 100 times, the plot thickens. So let's keep on going with this, man. Next week, chapters 16, 17, and 18. And we're going to keep on rolling with this, baby. So appreciate you. I love you for all the listens and all the messages. And I will talk to you soon. Y'all have a good one. See you later. Bye. Peace.